It is a pleasure to be here at the Range Beef Cow Symposium. And like Doug indicated, my topic that I'm going to visit with you about today is the value and use of byproducts in cow diets, and mainly high forage diets. And I'm going to concentrate basically on two byproducts, that being corn gluten feed and distillers grains. And I think that's probably okay to do it that way because of the number of byproduct plants that are, or at least ethanol plants that are going to be going up out there. And the option or opportunity, at least for cow-calf producers, to include or at least look at the opportunities and include those kinds of feeds into the cow ration. So with that in mind, here's what we're going to talk about today. I'll move this over so I can see a little bit. But I'm going to cover basically four general areas. One would be the nutrient attributes of corn gluten feed and distillers grains. And then talk about three experiments that include these byproducts in high forage diets. And then talk about a little bit, I think if we're going to understand the distiller's information, I think we need to talk a little bit about nutrient recycling, nitrogen recycling, so we'll cover that in a little bit. And then we'll talk a little bit about uses of these diets, or at least these byproducts in cow diets. So that's where we're going to go and hopefully stimulate some discussion for this evening's bullpen session. This would be corn gluten feed, and basically corn gluten would be a byproduct, or at least the major product in wet milling would be the production of fructose, and fructose would be used in human consumption. But two-thirds of that kernel is going to be starch, and so when you pull the starch out of that kernel, what's going to be left in there is basically going to be concentrated. And so when you take a look at the nutrient attributes of corn gluten feed, if you will, what's left in there would be basically protein. Protein content is going to be somewhere around 19 to 24% crude protein. About 0.8% phosphorus, so a fairly good phosphorus source, 4% fat, and about 37% NDF. And I think when you take a look at that, NDF would be neutral detergent fiber. And I think when you look at that, that really makes corn gluten feed, at least from a high energy standpoint, one of those products that we need to take a look at in high forage diets. Because what that means from a rumen standpoint is that we can probably digest this high energy feed in the rumen, much like you would digest starch. And so high NDF, when you take a look at corn, corn's about 10% NDF, and so now we have a feed that's fairly high in NDF. So from a rumen bug micro breakdown, we can probably break down this feed much similar, or the same way that we break down forages. It's going to be a high fiber feed with a high digestibility. Energy content's going to be fairly high. In fact, sometimes it'd be much higher than corn. And then sulfur, you have some sulfur in there. Maybe you don't need to be concerned with sulfur. In fact, from a NRC standpoint, maximum tolerable level of sulfur is somewhere around 0.4 in the diet. And so this is just a little bit higher than that, but you probably don't need to concern yourself with that, mainly due to the fact that you probably aren't going to have a feed that's going to be 100% corn gluten feed. So the things I'd like to maybe have you concentrate on is high protein, and that protein is going to be primarily DIP. So in other words, it's going to be broken down in the rumen and used for bacterial crude protein, for the bacteria to make their bacterial crude protein. The other thing is high phosphorus, and the third thing would be is that it's high in NDF, okay? So it's going to be digested very similar to the forage when it hits the rumen. This would be distiller's grains, and distiller's grains, again, is would be a product or a byproduct from ethanol production. And basically, again, you're taking out the starch. In other words, two-thirds of that kernel is going to be starch. And therefore, when you take that out, it's going to increase the nutrient attributes in that particular feedstuff. It's going to be a little bit higher in crude protein as compared to gluten feed. It's going to be about 30% crude protein. But the big difference there is that instead of being high in DIP, it's high in UIP, okay? So, in other words, UIP would basically bypass the rumen for digestion, get up in the small intestine, be digested there, and absorbed as amino acids. Okay, so it's only going to be 35% DIP, okay, degradable intake protein. So 35% of that 30% is going to be used by the rumen bugs to make bacterial crude protein. So big difference between distillers and corn gluten feed. I think Don Adams mentioned that here just a little bit ago. Fairly high in phosphorus, fairly high in fat, 11 to 12% fat. So it is fairly high in fat, which is different from corn gluten feed. And then again, the NDF is fairly high as compared to the original product. So here you have a high fiber source that's highly digestible in the rumen. And we take a look at the NDF, that basically means that it's going to be digested in the rumen by the bugs, very much like forage would be digested. So you don't have to have a lot of change in the bug population there. high energy feed. In fact, wet or dry, it's probably a little bit higher in energy as compared to corn. The fat content may limit its use. You got a feed here that's 11 to 12% fat. We probably don't want to have any more than 5 to 6% fat in the diet. So a fairly good fat source, but it may limit the use. And sulfur content about 0.4. I don't know. You concentrate those nutrients in there. I don't know where that 0.4 comes from, but it may be actually some sulfur-containing amino acids. So maybe you don't have to worry about that in this particular feed. I would say the sulfur that if you, this is additive. So if you do have high sulfur in your water, then these kinds of things are additive, and you probably need to pay attention to those kinds of things. So from a distiller standpoint, the thing I'd like to have you remember is 30% crude protein. But the majority of that protein is going to bypass the rumen and be absorbed as amino acids in the small intestine. And the other thing is, it's a fairly high fat source, and the NDF is going to make it really a very good feed to take a look at in high forage diets. So why grain byproducts might work in high forage diets, at least from the attributes that we've just taken a look at, fairly good protein source, DIP, when you take a look at most of the low-quality forages that we'd have available in cow rations, we need DIP. In fact, that's the first limiting nutrient, so be an excellent protein source, especially when you take a look at corn gluten feed. The energy content is one of those things. The energy, as an energy feed, it really looks very favorable, mainly due to the fact that it has a high NDF. And where it has a high NDF, that basically means the bug population isn't going to have to change all that much to get that digested as compared to the forage, which is going to make up the majority of that ration. Good source of phosphorus. In fact, when you take a look at it, 0.7 to 0.95% phosphorus. So in other words, if you feed 2 pounds of dry distillers grains or dry corn gluten feed, probably be the same amount of phosphorus that you get from 2 ounces of the 16% phosphorus mineral. The third thing is that at least on paper, at least from the attributes that I talked about here a little bit earlier, especially where you have low-quality forages, adding a little bit of protein, you'd have a positive associative effect. So in other words, protein, the forages are low in protein, you add that to them, you probably increase digestibility, and therefore you probably increase intake. And so on paper at least, or at least from the forage attributes, they really look favorable. I think with this kind of thing in mind, the thing that we need to do next is take a look at the well-designed experiments that include these feeds in there and just see how they work with high forage diets. The first experiment that I'll talk about is one that was conducted by Tim Loy, and this is a fairly large group of animals at a commercial operation. About 500 females in two treatments, the use of corn gluten feed and heifer development systems. The design of this particular experiment was to eliminate winter hay feeding and incorporate gluten or a supplement in there to meet that energy and protein need. And so here you have a female that's fairly high in the need for energy and protein as you move from mid-gestation to late gestation. You have dormant native range is probably deficient in both energy and protein, and you're going to supplement to see if you can't maintain heifers in good condition and not have an impact on reproductive performance. The primary questions that they had to ask here, what happens to reproductive performance when you go into this system, and also what would happen to supplementation costs. This is basically how the experiment set up, the pre-calving period from September to March, the post-calving period from March to September, body weight, body condition scores taken at the beginning of the experiment. In March, body condition score, weight, calf birth weight taken during the calving season. From March to September, those animals are going to be handled, those females are going to be handled in a single group, okay, or as a group. And in September, pregnancy rate, body weight, body condition score, and calf weaning weight would be taken at that time. So in other words, treatment groups are going to be during the pre-calving period, and then post-calving, they're all going to be managed as a group. This would be the supplements that they used, and in fact, the one on your left here would be the control supplement. That would be the supplement that was being used at the ranch. If you take a look at the components of that particular supplement, fairly high in feather meal, sunflower meal, and then wheat meds. 44.5% crude protein, about 53% of that being bypassed through rumen degradation. And so a fairly high bypass protein supplement. Them understanding at this particular ranch, understanding that these heifers grazing or eating this kind of forage are probably going to be short on metabolizable protein. And so the high bypass of the feather meal would help meet that metabolizable protein requirement.
You take a look at the treatment supplement, it would be fairly high in corn gluten feed, dry corn gluten feed about 72%, and then 23% sunflower meal, and then a little bit of bentonite. The crude protein content would be 23% in the treatment group, with only about 24% bypassing the rumen for rumen degradation. The thing that I, then we go to the feeding schedule, and basically the feeding schedule would be on the control side. You'd supplement or substitute hay, especially in December, January, and February, for native range, as compared to the treatment group, where basically you don't have any native hay included into that particular diet. So they estimated, so you come in here, and as the forage intake decreases on the control group, you increase the amount of hay in that diet, and you have a protein supplement there to meet that metabolizable protein requirement. On the treatment cows, basically they used the 1996 NRC to estimate the amount of intake, and then came in and supplemented the treatment supplement to not only meet the TDN requirement, but also to meet the metabolizable protein requirement. So similar intakes in regards to TDN and in metabolizable protein. If you take a look, this would be a slide looking at pre-calving body condition score change. You have body condition score on the y-axis, broke it down into 2 years because we had an interaction. The blue bar would represent treatment cows, and the red bar would represent control cows. In year one, both groups lost body condition during that pre-calving period. Treatment cows tended to lose less body condition as compared to the control cows. If you take a look at that second year, both groups lost body condition during that time period, with control cows losing more body condition as compared to the treatment cows. If you take a look at post-calving, that would be the time from calving basically March until September. If you take a look at the first year, both groups gain body condition, with the treatment group gaining more body condition, at least in the first year. In the second year, both groups lost body condition, with the treatment group losing more body condition in that second year. The reason why they lost more body condition, or at least lost body condition in that second year, we're in a drought, and then probably had some limitations regarding the amount of forage that they have available out there for them to eat. When you take a look at reproductive performance, absolutely no difference in reproductive performance between the two groups, 96% between the two groups. If you take a look at an economic analysis, this would be a partial analysis, a partial budget looking at supplement costs, grazing costs, and hay costs, labor costs to feed the supplement, labor costs to feed the hay. I've got 2 years here, but let's just concentrate on either one of the 2 years. But in the control group, the supplement cost would be higher. Grazing costs would be higher in the treatment group. Hay feeding costs would be higher in the control group. When you take a look at the cost to feed that supplement, higher in the treatment group, lower in the control group. When you take a look at hay, the cost of feeding the hay, higher in the control group as compared to the treatment group. Look at both years. The dollar advantage was towards the treatment group for somewhere around a little under $7 in this particular scenario. So what did we learn from this particular experiment that had fairly high amounts of corn gluten feed in it as part of the supplement? Is that we probably can say that supplements that contain high amounts of corn gluten feed can be used in forage diets that don't meet the energy and protein requirement. Supplements high in corn gluten feed appear to have no negative effect on reproductive performance. And then if corn gluten feed in a supplement is priced competitively, it looks like to me it can be cost effective. The fourth thing, and I think is really important, especially when you take a look at the possibilities of interactions among feeds, is that, at least in this particular experiment, it appears that high amounts of a supplement that contains corn gluten feed do not have a negative impact on digestibility of the forage. If it did have a negative impact on the digestibility of the forage, we would have saw a pretty big decrease in body condition scoring. So I think that's pretty important as you take a look at the incorporation or use of this feed in high forage diets. I'm going to switch gears now just a little bit and talk about the metabolizable protein system. And I think we need to talk about that mainly due to the fact that some of the things that are going on when we supplement some distillers in there has to do with this particular system. Metabolizable protein system basically says that crude protein isn't crude protein. Some of the protein that comes into the rumen is going to be degraded in the rumen, which is called DIP, degradable intake protein, and that's going to go to make bacterial crude protein. Some of that protein is going to go ahead and bypass the rumen, and it's going to get into the small intestine and is going to be absorbed or broken down and absorbed amino acids. MP, basically metabolizable protein, would be the sum of bacterial crude protein plus UIP or bypass protein. Distillers grains, and remember we talked about it just a little bit earlier, the distillers grains have a high amount of UIP, low amount of DIP, right? And when you get into forage diets, when you run them through the NRC, basically what it says that you need DIP. So now we have a feed that we may supplement that actually doesn't meet that DIP requirement. So the next two experiments that I'm going to talk about basically looked at the supplementation of DIP in forage diets. And in both cases, to meet that DIP requirement, they added just a little bit of urea. You take a look at urea on this particular slide, it's all degraded in the rumen, okay? When it comes into the rumen buds break it down, take the nitrogen or ammonium off of there, make bacterial crude protein, and therefore you meet the bacterial crude protein need during, or it's all 100% degraded in the rumen. So we're going to take a look at a couple experiments here where we did meet that DIP requirement and we did not meet that DIP requirement, and we'll take a look at the performance of these animals in these particular experiments. This would be the experiment. This would be some lightweight heifers on a diet that's 58% corn cob, 12% sorghum silage, and then 30% distillers grains. And basically what they did is ran this particular ration through the NRC and then let it predict the deficiency in DIP. And then to meet that DIP requirement, they basically came back and added urea to meet that DIP requirement. So in one treatment, you basically did not meet the DIP requirement. In the second treatment, you met a third of the DIP requirement. Third treatment, about two-thirds of the DIP requirement, met the DIP requirement, and then exceeded the DIP requirement. In fact, in this particular experiment, when you got to 1.2% supplementation of urea, basically that's where you met the DIP requirement. If you'd run that through the NRC, this is what it would say in regards to performance. If you ran that particular ration through the NRC, meeting or not meeting the DIP requirement at different levels, you'd see that at least in treatments 1 and 2, where you did not meet that DIP requirement, that performance would be less than those that you would be approaching or meeting or exceeding the DIP requirement. That's exactly what the NRC would say when you run it through the diagnostic portion of that model. Actual average daily gain was not different among those heifers, okay? Didn't depend on what treatment they were on. Actual average daily gain was not different. Intake was not different among those five treatment groups for those heifers. Feed efficiency was not different for heifers on those five different treatment groups. And so what predicted in NRC didn't actually happen when we ran this particular experiment. In fact, no difference in average daily gain, no difference in feed efficiency, no difference in feed intake. When you ran it through the NRC, basically this is what it looked like in regards to metabolizable protein and DIP, degradable intake protein. The green line represents metabolizable protein. So metabolizable protein, again, would be bacterial crude protein, right, that bacteria make, and then bypass protein, and that sum would be metabolizable protein. So in all five treatment groups, you had a positive MP, if you will, and then in the first two treatment groups, a negative DIP started to meet that requirement when you got into the third treatment group and then exceeded the DIP requirement. So both in the final two treatments, both MP and DIP were met. But still, we had no difference in performance among those heifers. You take a look at the diet and you kind of analyze the diet, 70% TDN, 69-70% TDN. As you added urea in that in those diets, you increased the amount of protein. DIP, of course, was negative in the first two, approached to zero in the third, and exceeded the DIP requirement. Basically, because we knew the actual average daily gain in these particular experiments, you can go into the 1996 NRC, use the ANI adjuster, and adjust it to the exact average daily gain, and that has an impact on metabolizable protein number there. And so we did that, and that's exactly what happened in these particular experiments. So No difference in performance if you did or did not meet the DIP requirement. This would be a second experiment where we included some distillers grains into a high forage diet. The forage here is hay, 7% crude protein, 54% TDN. They ate the hay ad libitum and came in there with two treatments. One would be 3 pounds of distillers grains on a dry matter basis. And then when we ran it through the NRC, you needed about a tenth of a pound of the urea to meet that DIP requirement. So the other treatment would be 3 pounds of distillers and a tenth of a pound of urea to meet that requirement. A 28-day, every 28 days took average daily gain, and the treatment period was about 84 days. If you'd analyze that particular ration as well, about 64% TDN in both treatment groups, about 11.8% crude protein. As you put some urea in there, you'd increase the amount of crude protein in those diets. DIP negative in the one that we didn't add urea, positive 1 gram per day in the one that we did add urea. Again, we knew the exact average daily gain. We adjusted using the ENI adjuster, adjusted the metabolizable protein. And when you take a look at it, no difference in average daily gain among the heifers in each of the treatment groups, no difference in feed intake, and no difference in feed efficiency, much like the experiment that I just showed you a little bit earlier. So what can we learn from these particular experiments is that distillers grains and high forage diets, when DIP is not met, as long as you aren't asking the animal to perform at a fairly high level, this may not be the same if you get into a feedlot ration, but at least in these particular rations, asking the heifers to perform the way that we ask them to perform in these experiments, no difference in average daily gain, hay intake was not affected, and feed efficiency was not affected. And what it maybe suggests is that if MP, metabolizable protein, is in excess, and that excess probably has to be greater than or equal to the negative DIP, that we may not have to supplement anything, or at least may not have to supplement to meet that DIP requirement. Basically, what we think is happening here, and this the big round ball there would be a rumen, and as you add distillers grains in there, and there we go. As you add distillers grains into here, you follow the arrow here. Part of that's going to be taken off here and made broken down and made into bacterial crude protein, right? MP or the high UIP content, bypass content is going to go on here and go into the rumen. Both bacterial crude protein and bypass protein is going to be absorbed here. Metabolizable protein requirement, if it is exceeded, basically what happens in this particular situation, if it is exceeded, you get up into the liver and you get ammonium being converted, or at least made into urea, and then you get recycling, okay? So what we think is going on here when we don't meet that DIP requirement is you're getting urea recycling, get back in here the rumen. Remember we talked about urea earlier, that's 100% degraded in the rumen and is used to make bacterial crude protein. So in these particular experiments, the high forage diets did not meet that DIP requirement, didn't ask the heifers to really grow at a very, very fast rate, and this can be applied to cow rations now, is that probably if it's in excess, if metabolizable protein is in excess and in excess more than what we have the DIP deficiency, we probably get urea recycling and we probably don't have to supplement DIP to meet that requirement. So, use of corn milling byproducts in cow diets, forage diets, when energy and protein is deficient. Scenarios that you might think about here, young females before and after calving, high milk females, standing dormant range where you're trying to put some body condition back on females prior to calving. And I really think it's a good energy source in this situation, but it also it's a good protein source, but it also appears to be an excellent energy source, mainly due to the fact that it's fairly high in NDF, and once it gets into the rumen, it's going to be digested in the rumen, very similar to what that forage is going to be digested, and so we don't have a big change in the microbe population in the rumen. Probably the other thing is it probably can be used in drought situations where you're looking at some limit-fed grain rations, and probably works fairly nicely in there, mainly due to the high fiber content that you have there. So, yeah, the final concept that I'd share with you today is supplementation of energy on an every other day basis. We think about protein supplementation, and some of the things that we've told you about protein supplementation is that you could feed protein on an every day basis if you needed it. You could feed it on an every other day basis, or you could feed it on an every third day basis and probably not see a decrease in performance. And probably is due to that nitrogen recycling. But we've typically said that if you're going to supplement energy, we'd have you supplement energy on an everyday basis, okay? Because the energy supplement that we'd have available in most cases would be something like the grains, and grains are fairly high in starch. And so if you would take a look at what we might think about in alternate day feeding of energy, we'd want to have a supplement to meet the energy deficiency when the forage is deficient. But the important thing is, from a supplementation standpoint, energy supplementation standpoint, is you want to maintain a stable and healthy rumen. From a pH standpoint, you'd not want to, at least in the rumen, you'd not want to decrease digestibility of the forage, because that's going to be the major component of that diet. And then from a rumen microbe population, you wouldn't want to change that rumen microbe population all that much. And so, and the other thing is could you reduce cost? And we've done some of these experiments and in fact, have done energy supplementation on every other day basis, and it's worked out quite well with the corn gluten feed and the distillers. And so I think those opportunities to maybe reduce cost, and now we have a feed, a high-energy feed, that once it gets into the rumen is going to act a lot more like a forage as compared to a grain. And so alternate day feeding may be an option for some producers, especially if you need some energy. So, to wrap this thing up, I think the value of grain, corn byproducts in cow diets, we talked about it as a protein source, excellent protein source. You think about the gluten feeds, fairly high in DIP. Distillers grains may be a little bit higher in UIP, but if you have high enough MP, maybe you don't need to worry about DIP in those situations. Energy source, I really think its applicability in high forage diets may be as an energy source as much as it is as a protein source, mainly due to the fact that it's going to be digested very similar to the forage that you're feeding. It is a fat source, especially the distillers. 11 to 12% fat can be used as a fat supplement. Probably have to make sure that we don't get over 5 to 6% fat in a diet. An excellent phosphorus source, and then it may be one of those products that we can use as far as an energy supplement. We might be able to use that on every other day basis. Could probably feed in most rations, or at least some rations we put together, 8 to 10 pounds on a dry matter basis. Maybe mature cows, if you needed it, you go up to 12 pounds. With that, it's been a pleasure to visit with you. I look forward to the bullpen session this evening. Thank you.
I would add also...